Dr. Zero, 6, Chapter 6, A Cry for Help Murdered. Wade's lips framed the word silently. The man whom he had more than half suspected of being the killer was now lying dead at his feet. The handle of a small, sharp knife projected from Ornstein's side. It was a knife that Wade remembered having seen on a shelf at the time of his former visit. Ornstein had used it as a paper cutter. There were no signs of a struggle. The killer must have taken Ornstein by surprise. Then Wade saw a half-open door into the next room. He walked to it, opened it farther, and saw that it gave into a small laboratory with a window opening on a fire escape. Something was lying in the center of the floor. It was a crumpled cambric handkerchief. He picked it up, then whistled. In one corner of the handkerchief were the initials ZS. He went to the window and stared at it tensely. A square had been cut cleverly out of the pane and the glass pushed in so that someone could reach the lock. It had been done so neatly and quietly that Ornstein in the next room hadn't heard anyone enter. Wade examined the edges of the cut pane. The cuts were deep but uneven. They hadn't been made by any regular glass cutter. But they had been effective. He went back into the main laboratory, picked up the telephone and called Thompson's number again. "You might as well stay out of bed, Chief," he said. "You won't get any sleep tonight. Ornstein has been bumped off now. Not a fireball this time. Someone sneaked up and stabbed him with his own knife. You'll want to come over and take a look." In 15 minutes the siren of a fast police car made complaining echoes over the campus grounds. Wade had spent those 15 minutes prowling around Ornstein's laboratory. But he hadn't found anything of interest. The still, marble-white face of the professor kept its secret. There was surprise rather than fear written on his dead features. When Thompson arrived, Wade told him all that he had seen and found, including the handkerchief with the initials ZS. "On it." "It's Smith, all right," said Thompson grimly. "But how to find him? He must have a hideout somewhere near here." The inspector turned and snapped orders to two of his men. "Hunt around the campus. Look for his tracks. If you find one of his footprints near the fire escape, we'll have him nailed as the murderer. Then we'll smoke him out of his hole if it takes a year." He sent two other men on the run to Smith's dormitory. "We've had the place shadowed," he said. "But he may have sneaked in." All over the campus, lights were springing up as the news of the murder spread to students and sleepy faculty members. Wade began to examine the window again with Thompson at his side. Then the telephone in the outer laboratory began ringing harshly. A detective picked it up, listened, then held the instrument out. There were tense lines in his face. "Someone's calling for help," he said. Wade, stepping forward first, snatched the phone from the man's hand and put the receiver to his ear. A voice he recognized at once came over the wire. "For God's sake, I'm being attacked, here in my laboratory, help, I..." The voice trailed off in a wheezing gasp. It was Professor Hartz speaking. Wade verified this from the frightened operator downstairs. Hartz had called the Institute's switchboard and the operator had transferred the call to Ornstein's room, knowing the police were there. "Come on," said Wade, turning to Thompson. "I know where Hartz is. Someone is up there with him, Dr. Zero, I think." He went downstairs with Thompson and a detective at his side. They ran across a section of the campus and Wade led them to the building, on the top floor of which Hartz had his place. Thompson fumed with impatience as the old-fashioned elevator in Hartz's building went skyward sluggishly. "Hell," he said, "this place is like the Ark. He'll be dead by the time we get there." But Hartz wasn't dead. A muffled voice called out in answer to their knock. "Come in." Hartz was on the floor, his head and shoulders resting against a couch. His collar and tie were ripped open. He was fingering his neck and gasping hoarsely. The room was in complete disorder with books and papers scattered around and a chair tipped over. The window was open. Hartz pointed toward it. "He came through there, and left the same way." Hartz's voice was a hoarse croak. "I didn't see him. He grabbed me from behind." Wade ran to the window. "A fire escape zigzagged down here, too, and night shadows obscured its bottom." Thompson lifted Hartz onto the sofa, then went and got him a drink of water from the cooler. "Was it young Smith? Didn't you get a glimpse of him?" Hartz shook his white head. "No, but it was his hands I felt. The poor boy must have gone insane." "Ornstein was murdered a few minutes ago," said Thompson. "We've got to locate Smith now. He and Dr. Zero are the same man." Hartz nodded. "An egomaniac," he said. "A man with a Napoleonic complex." Wade recognized phrases from the terminology of popular psychology. He was staring around Hartz's laboratory. A skylight window lighted it in the daytime. Batteries of powerful bulbs hung down with silvered reflectors behind them to make the place bright at night. On three sides of the room the walls were lined with books and cabinets containing minerals and chemicals. Wade seemed suddenly to lose interest in Hartz and what he was saying. He walked over to a bookshelf and began taking down volumes. The professor turned his white head to stare at Wade's back. Inspector Thompson turned, too. His voice was sarcastic. "We've got a murder investigation on our hands, Hammond. If you want to read, why don't you join the library?" But Wade wasn't reading. He couldn't seem to find a book that satisfied him. He was pulling them out now and piling them on a nearby table. Thompson spoke again. "What the hell's the matter with you, Hammond? Have you gone nuts? Leave those books alone." Professor Hartz lifted his feet off the sofa and banged them down on the floor. His expression had suddenly changed. "Keep away from my books," he snapped. "Leave them alone, young man." Harsh lines had come into the professor's face all at once. They were lines of poisonous bitterness. Lines that seemed to have been etched there by hidden, unhealthy emotions and secret hellfires. He rose and moved toward Wade, one claw-like hand stretched out and his eyes blazing. For Wade had paid no attention to either him or Thompson. He was pulling out more books and reaching in behind them. Suddenly he grabbed two large red volumes. They left a hole in the shelf, and Wade's hand darted in. For a moment his fingers groped. Then there came a click of metal. Wade stepped back and Inspector Thompson gasped. The shelves of books covering the whole side of the room were swinging outward, disclosing a door in the wall behind them. "My God, Hammond, what's this?" Thompson was staring in amazement at the secret door. Professor Hart seemed suddenly to have turned into a madman. He leaped toward Wade, his withered old features a hideous mask of hate. His eyes seemed inhuman in their ferocity. He wasn't the cool scientist now. His hands reached toward Wade's throat like talons. But Wade stepped aside and whirled. He gave Hartz a sudden violent push that sent him staggering back across the room. "Watch him, Chief. See that he doesn't pull a gun or a knife. I want to take a look in here." Wade spoke with an air of confidence that left Thompson speechless. He pulled the hidden door open and stepped into the room behind it after snapping on a light switch. The room was another laboratory, compact and efficient, with a cement floor and a strange, squat piece of mechanism crouching in the center like an evil monster. "Look." Wade was pointing up toward the skylight. There were windows up there which could be slid back on rollers, and, close to them, was the end of a telescoping metal shaft which had its base in the strange machine. "I'm not enough of a scientist to tell you just what it is," said Wade. "But here's where those fireballs that killed Munn and the two detectives came from. It's an electroatomic generator of some sort, capable of creating ball lightning which can be directed by means of a radioactive metal." A noise interrupted his words. It was the sound of thumping feet. Someone was kicking on wood. It came from the door of a nearby closet. Wade walked over and flung it open. His face showed little surprise. But Thompson muttered in amazement. Inside the closet, a young man with a gag in his mouth was tied hand and foot and lying on the floor. He had drawn his knees up and was thumping his heels against the wall lustily. It was Zodiac Smith. Wade took a penknife from his pocket, reached down and freed the young man. Smith was willing to talk this time. Words tumbled over each other. "What did that old buzzard mean, tying me up? Did Ornstein put him up to it, and what's this place here?" "This," said Wade softly, "is Dr. Zero's laboratory. Our old friend, Hartz, has a dual personality. He's Dr. Zero, master criminal, with a brain fired by ambitious schemes, and Professor Hartz, PhD, savant of science. You've been studying with a versatile man, Smith. You should feel honored." "Good God, you don't mean it. Hartz has been doing all this?" "Yes, look over there, Smith. Even I can guess what he was doing here besides making lethal ball lightning." "That was a side issue." Wade was pointing toward one side of the secret laboratory. A big electric furnace stood on a metal table. There was a cooling tank beside it and a shelf of glass jars containing hundreds of carbon crystals. "I knew he was bugged on the notion of making artificial diamonds," said Smith. "But I didn't guess he'd ever tried it." "That was the motive behind his killings," said Wade. "He had to have money and lots of it for his experiments. It was why he thought of his extortion plot against Munn. He was nuts on diamonds. I felt when I first met him that those two stones he wore were somehow out of character. He even used a diamond to cut the glass on Ornstein's window. He must have thought Ornstein was getting suspicious and he went there to plant a chunk of metal as he did in my apartment and then send a couple of fireballs to do the trick. Ornstein caught him at it and Hartz used a knife to cover his tracks. He used you, Smith, to spy on Ornstein's electrical work and keep track of him. Smith stammered and flushed. I thought Ornstein was the murderer, he said.
Yes, said Wade.
You thought you were being a pretty clever amateur detective with that gadget of yours. I suppose you found that the fireballs came from the direction of the Institute.
Yes, I thought Ornstein was sending them.
So did I for a while, said Wade. Hartz was clever. His acting just now showed that. He knew we'd suspect Ornstein and you. He dropped your handkerchief when he went to Ornstein's place to make sure.
Thompson edged forward.
There's one thing I don't get, he said.
Who kidnapped Miss Munn?
Where is she?
Wade nodded toward Smith.
I've got an idea you can answer that, he said.
Smith nodded and turned red again.
I didn't kidnap her, he said.
I warned her that she was in danger and got her to hide for a while in a safe place.
She was scared. She didn't like Ornstein as much as she seemed to.
She always trusted me.
She's in a hotel in the country.
That's another reason I begin to think Smith wasn't the criminal, said Wade.
I figured by the tracks that Arlene Munn had left her aunt's willingly.
Then that clue of the handkerchief in Ornstein's place was a little too obvious.
That and the diamond scratches on the window made me think that Hartz was the murderer.
With Ornstein dead and Smith out, there seemed to be no one else.
This room of Hartz's didn't look big enough to take up all the space here.
I figured there was another room behind one of those bookshelves.
Thompson wiped his face.
You've done a swell job, Hammond.
We may not land Hartz in the hot seat.
They may send him to the bug house instead.
But with Dr. Zero out of the way, we'll be able to get a good night's sleep again and the department will have some peace.
The end.
Dr. Zero, by Paul Chadwick.